Are you applying to medical school but concerned about your undergraduate record? Or did the medical bug bite you when it was too late to take the med school prerequisites? Then you either are or should be considering a post-bac program. And today's guest will tell you how to get into a great post-bac program.
Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. Your host is Accepted's founder and world-renowned admissions guru, Linda Abraham. At Accepted, our mission is to get you to that unforgettable moment when you read your acceptance email and shout, "Yes, I'm in!" Confident you'll be attending the perfect program to help you launch the career of your dreams.
Welcome to the 403rd episode of Admission Straight Talk. Thank you so much for tuning in. You're going to get a ton of insight into post-bac programs and admissions today, but I know that we won't have the time to go from A to Z. So you're invited to download the free guide, The A to Z's of Applying to Post-bac Programs. You'll learn who are post-bac programs for, which we might touch on, how to apply effectively to post-bac programs, what letters of rec are essential, and how you should approach the personal statement for post-bac programs. Download your free copy of The A to Z of Applying to Post-bac Programs from accepted.com/post-bac guide. That's P-O-S-T-B-A-C-G-U-I-D-E. Our guest today is Dr. Barry Rothman, Accepted Consultant. Dr. Rothman has been on the show several times. The first time he was a guest was way back in 2013. That was before he joined Accepted. At the time, he was serving at San Francisco State University as a professor of biology, director of post-bac programs, director of SFSU's Health Professionals Advising Committee, director of the Pre-Health Professions Certificate Program, and director of the SFSU University of Pacific Dental Post-bac Program. He has since left SFSU and is now a much-loved consultant at Accepted. Barry, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Good to be here again.
Thanks for joining me again today. Now, we got that you were really involved in post-bac programs, but how and when did you get involved in post-bac programs?
Around 2005, I was being a professor at San Francisco State, and my dean approached me and said, "We need a new health professions advisor." And I thought, I like working with students and I'm interested in molecular medicine. This sounds good. And I get 3 units of release time and it should be easy. Well, it was a lot more work and I loved it. I really fell in love with the area and especially the students, working with them closely, helping them find their way into the health profession that they really want to get into. In fact, the post-bacs at the time, there was an informal post-bac program that all the CSU campuses had, but there were no services. You could just take classes with undergrads.
And so what services did you feel were lacking?
Mostly advising, letter writing. There was no organization. It was just free floating. The post-bacs who came to SF State could take classes, but that was it. Nobody took care of them. And so a group of them approached me and asked, "We would be willing to pay extra money if we could get some advising." And so I said, "Okay, let's put our heads together." We wrote up a proposal. My dean got on board and I had to take it to our academic senate, which was an learning experience in itself, having to learn how to navigate the political waters at San Francisco State, which are pretty calm, not turbulent. But still, I had to learn how to present my program to the academic senate and convince them that this was a good thing to do. And it turned out great. Amazingly, it was in the black ink from the very beginning. I think now the program, I'm not directing it anymore, but now the program's into its like 14th or 15th cohort. It's been quite successful.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's amazing.
Can I just add one thing?
Absolutely.
Was formulated on the idea of cooperation, that many health profession situations can have a competitive component to them. And we really wanted to select people who wanted to be team players. And that has been very successful. A lot of folks don't want to be in a heavy competitive situation and want to be in a situation where people pull together and support each other.
For sure. Let's dive into the different kinds of post-bac programs that exist, okay? Let's also focus this on, for now, MD and DO post-bac programs. So can you give us that overview?
Sure. The two main divisions are career changer and academic enhancer. So a career changer is somebody who hasn't taken any or perhaps one or two of the prerequisites for medical school. And so they are, in essence, changing their career from whatever they were doing before to a medical track. An academic enhancer is somebody who's completed most or all of the medical school prereqs and probably some electives, but hasn't done as well as they want to be. And so they need to enhance their academic record by taking additional, usually upper division biology electives. So those are the two different areas. There are many more academic enhancers than career changers. And not surprisingly, there are many more academic enhancer programs than career changer programs. Our program at San Francisco State actually catered to both. And so the career changers would be taking classes that the academic enhancers wouldn't. But at the end of the career changers time, which was usually 2 years, they would take a few electives, and there they would overlap with some of the academic enhancers. The academic enhancers would take a diet of lots and lots of upper division bioelectives, such as neuroscience, immunology, endocrinology, et cetera.
Aren't there also differences? I mean, I think those are the two main differences in terms of post-bac programs, but also there are also differences in terms of some programs award a degree and some programs don't award a degree. You already mentioned informal versus formal post-bac programs. Can you explore some of those distinctions also?
Sure. So formal versus informal. A formal program is structured. It has somebody running it and hopefully paying attention to what's going on. Sometimes they have to hire their own faculty. In our program, it was a formal structured program. I hired all of our faculty. Our classes actually were separate from all the undergraduate classes. Some post-bac programs will throw you in with the undergrads. Some will have separate classes. They can both be formal programs. An informal post-bac program is the way things were before I started my program at San Francisco State. People come, they take classes where they can get in with the undergraduates. So if there's room in a class and the school is prepared to do this, you can take a class with the undergraduates. The problem with that is there's no financial aid. So you have to pay out of pocket for this. The good part is, compared to a formal program, it's less expensive all around. The formal programs will either confer a certificate, which was the case in my program, or they can confer a degree. And so many programs now confer master's degrees because they actually have more robust financial aid. If you're an undergraduate, there's a limit that the feds will put on the amount of loans you can get, somewhere around $70,000 lifetime. And so when you become a graduate student, then it's a whole new pot of money. And so a lot of post-bac programs have gone to become master's programs, either master's programs that will then allow you to find a better source of loans. But, you know, for somebody whose money is really tight, an informal post-bac program, what you might call a do-it-yourself, a DIY post-bac program, is really a good way to go. And I've had a lot of clients through Accepted whose hands I've held through the entire post-bac process, and they've done very well. I would not suggest doing this all by yourself. It's good to have an advisor somewhere who will guide you and just somebody to bounce ideas off of.
They can pay for 5 hours with you for $1,500 and still much less than the cost of a formal, or the difference between an informal and a formal post-bac program.
It's a big money saver. And the good thing about advising is it goes a long way. What I can tell you in 20 minutes could be what you need to hear for the whole next semester. And so it's very efficient financially.
Is there anybody who, in your opinion, should consider a formal post-bac program?
I think people who like structure and can afford it, it's a really good way to go, especially a program where the directors are involved and it's a good community, it's a robust community, and where you can learn from fellow pre-meds, because most of the people in post-bac programs are pre-meds. So that would be preferred. But again, one can do quite well in an informal post-bac program, as long as somebody's guiding you.
Right. And you do well in your classes.
Yes, you do have to do well in your classes.
I know some of the formal programs, they also have like study skills training, maybe even some MCAT support. I'm not advocating one over the other. Obviously, you can take a pretty good MCAT class for, again, a lot less than the difference between a formal post-bac and an informal post-bac. But I know that can be that support can be really helpful, especially if somebody is doing this from the academic enhancement angle.
Yes, yes. The amount of support is really important. In our program, we had a learning specialist and a psychotherapist available because our students, not from our program, but they brought their own stress in, and they found it very valuable to have those resources. Now, not everybody needed those resources, but having that showed them that we really cared about them and wanted to support them in ways that maybe they weren't supported as undergraduates. If you're going to shop around for a post-bac program, see what kinds of extras they have. In our program, we had an MCAT sort of colloquium where people could study together and pose MCAT questions to each other, but it wasn't a standalone MCAT course. And so those folks were taking a standalone MCAT course outside of the program and just coming together to teach each other. And I think that's a really good way to get extra mileage out of a pricey MCAT program.
What advice do you have for academic enhancers? We've been discussing this a little bit, but let's go into a little bit more. Considering a return to school and pursuing a career as a physician, do they have to make up for low undergrad grades? Now, how does that all work in the process?
Well, it really depends on your undergrad GPA. Yeah. What I've noticed is med schools do not like seeing undergrad GPAs below around 2.6. And you really have to work hard for years to overcome that beyond any numbers. Just med schools are very cautious about somebody who didn't do that well in undergrad. But if you're up, 2.7 and above, then med schools will take you into account. But then you have to show that you really have changed something. For many students, it's they didn't have good study skills, they weren't mature, or something was going on in their lives. And so you have to both explain what was going on and show that you can maintain a sustained high GPA, which means showing that you can do that for something like 40 semester units. It's a lot, but it's better to do that than to apply to med school prematurely and not get in. In fact, we had about an 80% success rate. And the interesting part of it was that the 20% unsuccessful students mostly were people who didn't take our advice and applied prematurely. So med schools really like it if you think about what you're doing and take enough time to do it right the first time, rather than rushing prematurely, not getting in, and then you just have to apply again some other time.
And if you apply too many times, your chances of acceptance start to decline. What advice do you have for career changers considering a post-bac program to facilitate their career change?
First of all, you need to have taken some science and math classes. We had an occasional applicant who had taken zero science and math classes. I mean, how are we going to judge your ability to prosper in science and math classes if you haven't taken any? You need to take some, and you need to have a track record of at least doing decently in them. And if you haven't, then go to a community college and take some intro non-majors, biology, chemistry, and maybe math, pre-calculus, and just show that you have some aptitude for that, rather than wasting time applying and then not getting into a post-bac program. Show them that you're thinking about what you really need to convince them.
The people I'm going to talk about right now are possible candidates for a post-bac program. They are people who applied this last cycle, and maybe they haven't gotten any interview invitations at this point. And as we're recording this, it's January 19th, okay? So it's mid-late January. And some of the wannabe members of the class matriculating to medical school in 2021 are going to find themselves without a spot. But it's now January. Do you recommend they wait until they know they don't have a spot to start thinking about a post-bac program? Should they start thinking about it now? Should they assess whether that's really the right thing for them to do? What would you recommend?
I don't think I would jump into starting to apply to post-bac programs this early. This cycle is really strange. And I think things are moving a little more slowly. And as you know, Linda, we have something like 20% more applicants. So yeah. I think the schools are having trouble processing all of them. And I think the interview calendar will be pushed back a little bit. I just think it's premature to get too far into a post-bac program, but it isn't a bad idea to start thinking about it. And first of all, think about, well, what are the weaknesses in your application? What do you think your weaknesses are? You can also hire one of us to do a review It's not very expensive. And we can do what's called a rejection review, or you could call it a pre-rejection review or a maybe rejection review. Just see what, you know, what maybe you need to shore up. Having this extra time, you could work on that. Maybe you don't have enough clinical experience, which, as you know, is hard to get now that we're in COVID. So more experience, maybe you need to show that you're still academically active and you need to take some courses, even if they're online courses. It's good to think strategically and think about what you could start to do now, rather than waiting till the end of the cycle, when the time between then and the beginning of the next cycle is just a few months. And I would add that the wise reapplicant, if let's say it doesn't work out, you don't get in, the wise reapplicant thinks about maybe spending an extra year really getting things together rather than just jumping right back into the application cycle. If you are coming in with essentially the same application, you're going to get most likely the same result. It's really good to put some time into fixing your application.
Once a student decides, let's say our applicant goes to April and finds out that he or she really was not accepted and decides it's my 3.0 GPA that needs to get shored up, academic enhancement, okay? And they decide they want to go for a formal post-bac program. What should they consider in choosing such a program? And we already talked about the extras, you know, whether it's MCAT support or academic study skill support. What else would you have them consider?
Well, I think they should think about how good of a community the post-bac program creates. There are some that are quite competitive just in terms of the everyday process. You know, if you like that kind of atmosphere, then fine. But if you don't, you may not prosper in that. So how competitive or non-competitive the vibe is and how engaged the directors are, is somebody going to be paying attention to you, or is it sink or swim? Let us know how you did at the end. Also, the quality of their committee letter. Some schools write kind of cookie cutter committee letters. Others really go to some length to make it very personal and really support you as an applicant. So those are some subtleties you may not think about. And of course, you can think about the success rate of the programs, but there's no central compilation of the success rates of these programs. So you can ask and hope that they're telling you what really is.
What does a typical post-bac program application consist of? I mean, is it as difficult as the MCAS plus secondaries, et cetera, or is it a little bit more simple?
Well, in the old days, each school had their own post-bac application, but now we have post-bac CAS, post-bac Central Application Service. CAS has become an industry. And so there are CASs for optometry school, pharmacy school, vet school, and they are all end in CAS, like VIMCAS for vet schools and PharmCAS for pharmacy schools. So now there's post-bac CAS. And so I think
CASPA.
CASPA, right. There are CASs in the beginning and not the end. But those are standardized, and it's a good idea to centralize the application process because then you can apply to a number of programs using more or less the same application. They'll have a personal statement that's around 5,000 characters. They'll have a place for experiences, very much like the medical school application process. And then each school will have its own supplemental questions. And so, again, that's maybe a little bit more like some of the other CASs. And those supplemental questions are starting to take over for the secondary applications so that instead of getting a secondary, in some cases, it all goes in with the primary application. And not only do you apply through post-bac CAS, but then you look up the school that you're applying to and you find out what extra questions they have. And when you submit to that school, you have to submit your answers to those supplemental questions.
There's no automatic screening. There's no screening at all between the secondary / supplemental and the primary.
I think the supplementals serve as secondaries.
Yes. It certainly sounds like it.
It just all comes in at once instead of in two separate batches.
So when you submit the post-bac CAS, you'd also be submitting the supplementals at the same time?
Yes. What you can do is submit the post-bac CAS, and then you can add schools on as you complete their supplementals. So you don't have to complete every school all at the same time.
Yeah, that makes life a little easier.
Fortunately and mercifully.
Yeah. What should applicants emphasize in the personal statement for the post-bac program? Is there any keys that open the door, magic keys?
Yes. This seems obvious, but why are you applying to the post-bac program?
Okay, it's a good one.
And admitting why you are applying. So let's say your academic record is not perfect and you think that that's important for getting into medical school, then say it. It's really confusing. I've read applications to my post-bac program where it wasn't clear why in the world the person was applying. They didn't want to admit that they had a tarnished GPA or they didn't have enough of this or that. It's really good to show that you understand your situation, you've thought about it, and these are the things you need to improve your application and that the program is a good fit for you. That's one thing that's important. I think another thing is adding personal information. So some personal statements can be laundry lists or repeats of resumes, and those don't work very well because the personal part is missing. So one of the things we like to see is, well, where's your heart? What really motivates you? Where are you coming from? And so some personal information about your background, your values, why you're doing this, that helps because that will make you different than the other applicants.
My next question is actually, what's a common mistake or what are some common mistakes that applicants have made in their post-bac applications? I think you just listed two, but that they specifically related to the personal statement. Are there others?
There was the one about not having taken any science or math classes. So
right.
That's a mistake. I think we covered the main mistakes.
The main ones.
These post-bac programs have interviews. Now they're online, but in the past, many of them are in person. You need to be prepared for your interview. One of the things our program did was we had a waiting room where the students could hang out, and we encouraged them to talk to each other. And we were secretly watching them interact. And one of the things that stood out was there were occasional applicants who would just sit in a corner and look at their cell phone. And so that made us think, well, I wonder how much of a team player that person is. So I think thinking about your interview, take it seriously, get some help with it, because most of us don't know how to interview. We're not born with the interview right. gene. And think about your impression, even when you're not in a formal interview. Even when you're just schmoozing with somebody, you're still, in a way, interviewing. And so you really need to treat people well and politely, which hopefully you would do anyhow. So yeah, the interview is another important part. And that's very disappointing if you get as far as an interview and then you don't interview well. That can be very disappointing.
And I think your point about treating everybody you interact with, well, you should treat everybody you interact with, period, across the board, in a courteous and friendly way. But when you're talking about anybody at the schools you're applying to, whether it's the receptionist or the janitor or the director of admissions, it's particularly important that you be on your good behavior. Because if you're rude or discourteous to the janitor or the receptionist or anybody, another student, cafeteria worker, it can just somehow magically make its way back.
You know, I'm thinking of two other things. One is many schools are asking, what did you do during COVID? Or what are you doing during this COVID pandemic? And they want to know, what have you been doing? Sitting around watching Netflix? Or are you actively involved in some way to help your community? Which you can do online. You don't have to do it in person. That's definitely one thing. And the other is, now every school is asking about diversity and how you relate to the diversity of their program. Because most programs, including ours, want a diverse population. I think of medical schools and programs like post-bac programs as organs of social change. And they're making things change more than maybe other sectors of the population. And so they're bringing people in who have not had a lot of opportunities. And so how you relate to that, whether you're somebody from a disadvantaged or underrepresented background and what you've had to deal with, or even if you've grown up with a lot of privilege, how you've dealt with that privilege and how diverse of a population of people do you hang out with? Those are all really important, and that's going to help you with the med school application as well.
Great advice. Thank you. What would you have liked me to ask you?
You asked me the question I wanted you to ask me, which was, what happened to the 20% who weren't successful in our program? I would like to expand on that a little bit, which is
sure.
Families can be your support, and they can also be a pain. And sometimes families are well-intentioned and they pressure their adult children to apply prematurely, sometimes with tremendous guilt trips like, gee, cousin Charlie got into medical school. Why aren't you in medical school now? Or you're costing me a fortune. So you have to find ways to talk to your parents and calm them down a little bit, maybe get some outside help in doing that. And don't let that make you apply prematurely. If you apply prematurely, that's one whole application cycle that's gone. And the second cycle is okay. Many reapplicants get in. But the third cycle and the fourth cycle, no, those don't work so well. And the schools look at you much more cynically and much more carefully. So you have two precious cycles to apply, and don't waste one of them because you're getting a lot of peer pressure or family pressure to do so.
Great advice. Thanks again, Barry. We're going to link to resources related to this podcast from accepted.com/403. Those resources will include Dr. Barry Rothman's contact page, if you would like to work with him, his previous podcast on Admission Straight Talk, and shows that we've had with med students who have done post-bac programs. Listener, thank you too for joining Dr. Barry Rothman and me for Admission Straight Talk's 403rd episode. Final reminder and a favor, download your free copy of the A to Z of Applying to Post-Bac Programs from accepted.com/post-bac guide. Again, that's accepted.com/post-bac guide. You can do it today. You can do it right now. Again, you can access it from accepted.com/post-bac guide. And the favor, if you find the show worthwhile, please tell a friend about Admission Straight Talk. They'll thank you, and so do I. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.